the XCast Podwatch. My name is Andrew Blaker. I'm your host today, and with me is guest Jade Shames. Hi, Jade.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Great, great. So today, episode 13, The Erlenmeyer Flask and Little Green Men. We'll start with The Erlenmeyer Flask. This, of course, is the season one finale, the 24th episode of The X-Files, written by Chris Carter, directed by R.W. Goodwin. A heavy-hitting mythology episode for this finale. Mulder and Scully discover evidence of secret government experimentation with alien DNA, but slowly but surely the evidence and anyone involved is quickly eliminated, setting the course for much of the rest of the series. So, Jade, season one finale, Erlenmeyer Flask, what are your thoughts on it?
I liked it. I thought it was good. It's strong. I'd like to get into the good moments first, but I did have like some gripes that I wanted to address as well. But overall, I thought it was really fun, and it was an exciting episode, and it really showed all the characters' strengths, I felt.
Absolutely. I think this really was Chris Carter's attempt to kind of take the mythology in a new direction and really start to solidify what was going to be parts of the mythology. You have a lot of good mythology episodes of season one, but they kind of are a little bit different. I mean, you have the pilot, you have Deep Throat, which, you know, kind of taps into the whole, you know, experimentation with alien technology. Then you have Miracle Man, which is about alien abductions. You have EBE. You have things that kind of just hop all around the place. Good episodes, but this one really takes it in the direction of the alien DNA angle. You have Mulder and Scully really kind of solidified in their roles, the believer and the skeptic. What are the standout standout moments for you of this episode?
Well, I really enjoyed when our main guy who's being chased, I forget his name right now, but he, it turns out, has alien DNA in him. I like it when he was injured and we got to see the effects of this new agent. And, it burned people, and it Mulder, I think, was actually knocked unconscious because of a bullet hole in his body. I just like little details like that. It makes the world a little bit bigger, and I enjoy that.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's Dr. William Sakaar is the guy that is being pursued, leaps off of the dock into the water, presumably dead, but they discover that, you know, he is in fact alive, bleeding green, acidic blood, which of course becomes the trademark of the aliens and alien-human hybrids that we encounter throughout the series. A number of significant MythArk characters from Dr. Sakaar, even though I believe this is the only episode that he is in, I believe. But of course, you know, an alien-human hybrid. I want to talk about Dr. Anne Carpenter, who, again, only in this episode, but this is the doctor that shares with Scully, you know, that her findings are, in fact, extraterrestrial, in by definition and in name, and I think that's a critical moment for her. That, as well as finding the alien fetus in the cryogenic lab. Those are key moments that really shape her, you know, realizing the scope of what she and Mulder are onto. And I think for me, my favorite scene, the one that stands out for me, and I do like this episode a lot, is the when Mulder discovers the storage warehouse with the men suspended in the tanks, the experiments going on with alien human hybrids. It's just a haunting scene
and creepy. Yeah, really creepy.
It is, and you don't know when you first see it what's going on, and yet, you know, it just ties together very nicely, and you figure out what is going on. You of course have Deep Throat, who, you know, is killed at the end of this episode. What are your thoughts on killing off Deep Throat, Mulder's informant, at the end of the first season? Would you have done it later, or is the timing right for you?
It's great. It's perfect. That moment, and when Carpenter, it's revealed that she's died and her whole family has died. Yeah. Those are two moments that I feel like put all of the powers of the government into perspective. And I think that it's always been omnipresent, but I think that now we're realizing that they're in some serious, serious danger. Like, as both, like, as characters in this story, but also as audience members watching that, we realize with the death of Deep Throat that major characters can be killed off. And so, yeah, pulling the rug from under us at this moment was perfect. Right when we start to get comfortable with the idea that, okay, well, probably no one serious is going to die. It's going to be more like a red shirt on Star Trek. You know, it's always going to be a character that we don't know. It's no one part of the main cast. But having this happen at the very end of this season solidifies that, like, you don't know what's going to happen next.
Absolutely, yeah. And of course, with Deep Throat's assassination, you have the critical words, the tagline to this episode, and words, you know, added to X-Files lore, which are trust no one. And you know, Deep Throat, you know, this is not the last time we'll see him, you know, not to spoil future episodes, but, you know, he does pop up again, and he remains a critical character throughout the entire series. And I think he's a great character, a great informant, and I do think that it was the right decision to kill him off. It was shocking, but like you said, you know, everyone is expendable, with the exception of, you know, perhaps Mulder and Scully, but it really does kind of throw the whole, you know, conspiracy into light, you know, and calls into question his own activities, you know, which get elaborated on even later. But so I definitely think it was the right move, just the right kind of shock. There's a nice symmetry, too, I think, to this episode. You know, the last few minutes of the episode mirror the pilot, where we have the cigarette-smoking man in the basement of the Pentagon. We have Mulder and Scully talking on the phone. I think it's the same time, even late at night, when he informs her that the X-Files unit has been shut down, and that is essentially the end of the episode. And I it makes a nice symmetry, a nice arc for the entire first season, which, you know, I'm not sure of the exact timeline, but when that was filmed, I think whether the series would return for a second season was kind of up in the air. They weren't 100% sure on it. And so, you know, had that in fact been the end of the show, what do you think that would have been? If it had been only a one season wonder, do you think it would have had, would that one season have been enough of an impact for you?
It would have been a totally different show, but I think I would have loved it for very different reasons. I think that it would have been extremely bleak and hopeless, and I think it would have actually been kind of brilliant, because I think that as it went on, for me anyway, in the very later seasons, it became very comic booky. Like it felt like things are starting to lose hold of its roots or the common mythology that was extended from the first season. And I feel like, you know, fantastical things kept happening, but if you ended it right here in this episode, I mean, think about how kind of brilliant that would have been. I mean, it would have just sort of been like, yes, here are these two people trying to uncover this grand conspiracy, only to find out that it's all hopeless because the powers that be are too powerful and there's absolutely nothing you can do about it and you'll never know the truth.
Yeah. Yeah. And like you said, certainly would have been, you know, rather nihilistic, but I think it would have been very impactful, and it would have been, you know, I kind of like to do that along different junctures in the series. You know, if season two had been the end, if season, you know, four with Gethsemane, you know, how would the series have looked if they had actually stopped then and everything? And I think for season one, it's a pretty interesting case. You know, it's kind of wrapped up. I mean, in a sense, it's wrapped up. There's symmetry from the first to the last episode of the season. And I could see how, you know, I mean, it was not very well highly rated throughout the first season. And, you know, its future was not known. So I think that that's an interesting question to think about.
Yeah, definitely.
want to move on then to the season premiere of season two, Little Green Men. This would have been in the fall of 1994. Series was away for approximately 3 months and then returned. What do you think of this episode in terms of, I guess, a follow-up to the Erlenmeyer Flask? But also, I mean, I feel like it stands on its own pretty well. What are your thoughts on the episode?
I liked it, too. I thought that both of these episodes were pretty standout. I thought, you know, I've been watching X-Files for a lot of my life, and when I revisited these so that we could have this discussion, I remember thinking, like, oh, this is pretty cool show. Like, this is a really nicely done little story. And these two episodes in particular are almost like two sides of the same happening. You know, it was cool to watch the season finale and then the season premiere and then think about them as just two episodes out of the show. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was frightening. I forget sometimes that this show is scary. I mean, it can be very, very frightening. I guess because sometimes the episodes are a little campy or funny or complicated, but in a good way, you know, like enigmatic. But this one in particular was actually, I thought, pretty frightening.
No, definitely. It has a much darker tone, I think. Not that it's always had a dark tone, but this episode in particular, you have a nice setup with, of course, you know, in the previous season, the X-Files unit was shut down. Mulder and Scully have been reassigned. Scully is at Quantico, and Mulder is pretty much just doing wiretapping, and kind of distant from each other by necessity. She passes him in the hallway, says good morning, and he just kind of ignores her. And they meet in the parking lot of the Watergate Hotel, echoing both Deep Throat's assassination and the whole Deep Throat Watergate, you know, mythology there as well. Very much suggestive of the whole, you know, they're underground and what they're doing is dangerous, as they found out a couple months earlier or whatever the timeline is. There's a couple pivotal moments here that kind of are echoed throughout the rest of the show. The first, well, we're introduced to Senator Richard Matheson, who is Mulder alluded to that he had connections back in the pilot to high-level individuals, perhaps such as Matheson, who, you know, kind of is a patron for his work and gives him tips. This character is revisited a couple times throughout the series. What do you think about, you know, that whole spin they put on this? You know, him meeting in the office of a U.S. senator, getting some secret information. What are your thoughts on that angle?
Well, I did think, oh, this is very convenient, but at the same time, very necessary. I mean, we needed something to push the show back into itself. So obviously we've departed in the beginning in many ways. Like, first of all, the X-Files themselves are shut down. And the character, the bond between Mulder and Scully has broken down as well. So we needed something that drives us back into the narrative structure that we're familiar with. And of course, this, we don't have Deep Throat anymore, so it needs to be, you know, Matheson.
Right, and I think they kind of do set him up as a as an informant. Now, again, in future episodes, it's like the idea, I think, was abandoned. I mean, he's in this episode and a couple of others, but he's never to the level that Deep Throat or X or Marita Covarrubias years down the line, they're never in the same league with Senator Matheson. But he is a character that we will see again. His role, I feel like, never was really fleshed out. But I can see where they wanted to kind of introduce the idea to possibly make him more of an informant down the line. And then, of course, you have the really iconic scene of Samantha Mulder's abduction here. Recollected by Mulder. Mulder was, I believe he was about 12, I believe. Samantha, a few years younger. And depicts the night that he believes she was abducted by aliens. And it is a very, it's an iconic scene. I mean, it's a scene that is, echoed in flashbacks for, you know, throughout the series. And I think people even who are not familiar with the X-Files may have seen the scene unwittingly through, you know, promo clips and things like that. What do you think about how that whole thing was presented with Samantha's abduction?
I liked it. I mean, it was very disturbing. I think all I could think about as I was watching this scene unfold was like, man, Mulder is just so messed up. This has to just be incredibly traumatic. It's one thing to see a horrific incident happen to a loved one as a child, but it's another thing to have a horrific incident that is totally unexplainable. If I were trying to like get inside Mulder's head, I think he would just be a terrified individual all the time. Just deep down, just strung out and horrified by this for the rest of his life. I felt bad that they wrapped up that storyline a little bit later. I forget exactly what season it was in, but I always thought that this was a great motivating factor for him, and they didn't have to beat us over the head with it, but when it was kind of like wrapped up or explained, I felt a little remorse.
You're referring to when ultimately the fate of Samantha Mulder was revealed. Yeah, season seven, the middle of yeah. And you know, there's some people who, countering to what you're saying, which certainly was a motivating factor for him and a powerful, you know, it spun a lot of plot threads for the mythology for years. I mean, you had later episodes with, you know, believing Samantha is a clone, believing she never really died and she's there in the flesh. And, you know, she's used as a motivation for a long time. And a lot of fans are unsatisfied with how it was revealed in season seven, you know, what ultimately happened to her. And yet the series did continue to allude to her, as most recently as season 10 in the monologues for My Struggle. The 2008 film I Want to Believe referenced her. She was not a huge plot point, but she was referenced. And even though, you know, we're led to believe that, you know, we know her fate, what we learned about her in season 7's closure, you know, is the truth, you get the hint that, you know, that's never going to go away for him, which of course it wouldn't, but it continues to be a big narrative tool for the show too. I think this episode ends with, you know, Scully obviously finding Mulder down at Arecibo, the abandoned satellite service down there. And it's just, you know, it brings the two together. There's a great crash chase scene at the end, toward the ends of the episode. It alternates between monologue, which is how it starts out, a little slow, but it picks up speed, I think, as the episode goes, and ultimately ends the same way that episode started, with Mulder listening to wiretapping, the tape reel that he saved before fleeing Arecibo was blank because of a power surge, and so any evidence he might have occurred is gone. And he's back to where he started. And there's symmetry to that, which is, you know, throughout most of the series, that's the way it seems to go. But I just thought it was good. And I mean, it's where the mythology is really born. This and Duane Barry, Ascension, One Breath with Scully's abduction. That's when everything really kicks off for that part of the show. So I think it's really, really instrumental, essential viewing, definitely.
Okay, so I did have a thought about their use of hacking into someone else's personal files or computers. I thought, because I wanted to see an episode before, so I watched Roland, which was right before Erlenmeyer Flask. I swear, there's Mulder guessing the password to a computer in that episode, and then there's Scully and Erlenmeyer Flask just kind of guessing the project passcode to enter that secure area. And then in Little Green Men, Scully does it again. She's at Mulder's computer.
Yeah.
And she just kind of guesses with, I think it was the third try. It was like such an incredible serendipity. You know, like, I just think it's an interesting, like, device, you know, to use once, but I I feel like they missed something. Somebody should have said, hey, we've done this the last three episodes.
Yeah, that's definitely something that they use that convenience a little too much sometimes throughout the show. I definitely agree with that. It's a little too unlikely, so to speak.
Especially with the purity control thing, because I thought that was just so weird that she could... Also, like, why didn't Deep Throat give her that password? You know, he was like, I'm going to give you everything you need to enter this secure area. And she gets in and she finds out she doesn't have, like, an essential bit of information. But there was another thing that I thought was interesting about the end of Little Green Men that I'm sure is fodder for many discussions, but it was the moment when Skinner says, get out, and it turns out he's referring to the cigarette-smoking man. Which, yeah. By the way, when I was a kid, I called him Cancer Man. I thought he was referred to as Cancer Man. It's some weird, like, jamais vu that suddenly everyone started referring to him as cigarette-smoking man or just smoking man. Did you ever know him as Cancer Man?
He is referenced as Cancer Man a few times in the series. Yeah, that's another one. I think the cigarette smoking man's the most popular moniker for him, but Mulder calls him Cancer Man. I believe Skinner calls him Cancer Man infrequently, but yes, no, that's definitely a name for him.
I prefer that moniker. It's much creepier.
It's easier, and it's easier to say, isn't it, too?
Yeah. So it just seems like the impetus behind Skinner telling Cancer Man to get out is the small fact that Mulder reveals that his phone was wiretapped. And I thought, okay, is that it? Or is it just that Skinner's just looking for an excuse to get mad at this guy? And, like, you know, I don't know. What are your thoughts on that? Like, what was with that?
I don't know. I always have just seen that as the first, you know. Skinner was presented as someone who we weren't quite sure. You know, he came kind of late in season one. So when you see him in the Erlenmeyer flask, when you see him in Little Green Men, we don't know anything about him. We don't know if he's good. We don't know if he's bad. We don't know where his loyalties lie. And so I think this was an early indicator, by no means definitive, but I think it was an early indicator that, you know, he is going to try where he can to fight against the powers over him, like Cancer Man, who, you know, have, you know, pull the strings. And I think it was probably used to indicate to the audience that, okay, you may not be able to trust him completely, but you see where we're going with this.
Yeah.
Maybe. Because, like I said, we don't know. Skinner was, you know, in only a few episodes in season one and was only used intermittently for the first couple of years. So you don't know too much about him. You don't trust him until you start to see, you know, him interact more with the agents as well as Cigarette Smoking Man and see him stand up to him. And there's a great scene in season three's Paperclip where he just, you know, completely stands up and orders Cigarette Smoking Man to get out of his office. And, you know, you start to kind of realize where his loyalties lie.
Yeah, yeah.
It's good character development, I think, because, you know, you don't know what to make of him for the longest time. And there's times even later in the series where you still, you know, you just wonder about him sometimes and
yeah,
everything. So I think that was pretty effective to do that.
Yeah, you're right.
Well, tomorrow's episode will be season two's The Host and Blood, two great episodes, so we look forward to that. I want to thank our guest today, Jade Shames. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, great talking with you. And for those who want to follow us on Facebook, we are the X-Files Basement. The XCast Podwatch is an ongoing effort to trace the episodes from season one all the way through the upcoming 2018 season 11 of The X-Files. Please follow us on Facebook and Twitter. I'm your host, Andrew Blaker. And until next time, trust no one.